I'm Josefina Bonsundinvumba. Welcome to Retential Conversations, the podcast. I truly believe in the untapped potential existing in Africa and within African communities inside and outside of Africa, whose talent, hard work, and innovations can help and are helping transform our societies. I also believe in the value of stories and that by sharing, we can identify common lessons, challenges, and opportunities for growth. This podcast is for those interested in African narratives and topics that touch African communities, with the hope of creating a safe platform for open conversation, learning, and inspiration. I hope you're as excited as me and that you enjoy listening. Hi, everyone. We have such an awesome story for you this week. Check out this interview with Leonard Chitenge, a Congolese-American poet and activist based in Boston. Leonard is super active in mobilizing and organizing African diaspora communities in the U.S. and is clearly a hugely gifted and inspiring speaker. Leonard, take it away.
My name is Leonard Chitenge. I was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo. My family and I migrated to the United States at the age of 16 in Boston. Came at the age of 16 and I went to multicultural high school in Boston. And I remember in high school, one of my teacher said to me that, hey, you from Africa, you are better than African-American students. So just stay focused. Because you are better than this kid, this black kid in America, you know, don't worth a thing. So, you know, I was in a, you know, still learning English, but I think it did make sense. But it really bothered me. It really disturbed me, that statement. Came from Congo, you know, grew up between Congo and Gabon, too. But I think from that statement alone, because I was already passionate about black people in America. Growing up between Congo and Gabon, because I think at the age of 16, I was in tune with hip hop. With the music. So from that statement, I think it bothered me. I took that very seriously. So I decided to embark on a journey to really understand the challenges of people of color in the United States. So what I decided to do after high school, I went to study at a historical black college in Nashville, Tennessee. My mom thought I was crazy. My dad said, hey, you're trying to be his own man. I think from there, when I studied at Fisk University for a couple years, I studied African-American history. So it opened my eyes to really understand, you know, that there was more than Dr. King, more than Malcolm. So I really, it opened my eyes to really understand Africana study. Mm-hmm. In other words, the black experience and all over the globe. So from there, you know, I guess I became, you know, poet, a community organizer, a workshop presenter. So my work as a poet evolved around, you know, diaspora engagement, me really using our art as a way to discuss social change, social issue, but pertaining to the continent of Africa. So I think I started to realize that, oh, there's a big disconnect within the diaspora. I don't think folks know what's really going on in Africa or in the Congo. I mean, a bunch of disconnect and misunderstanding. So I think from there, I embarked on a journey using my arts, me as a poet, just, you know, using art for social change and against social issue. From there, you know, speaking around different places, moving around. So that's how it all started.
Yeah, it's interesting because you've talked about connection. And, you know, since you kind of grew up in the U.S. and you've built your life in the U.S., I imagine, how do you actually retain that connection to Africa and to your roots? And that's something, especially in the African diaspora communities, you know, the fact that you come from a place where you don't live, and then obviously you're speaking also to that place. How do you remain authentic to that identity?
Right, that's a great question. That's something that I think we all struggle with. That's something I struggle with. And it dawned on me, I was like, how did I do that? Because I always get like, wow, you've been here for a while. How are you in tune? Why are you so passionate about Congo, about Africa? I think to answer that question, it started at home. It's like, you know, home is where it's at. Home is the foundation of everything. I think with my parents, they reinforced the fact that, you know, hey, we are in America, but don't forget where you come from. So I think that, because I still speak French fluently, and I'm still update with my Lingala and a couple of the Congolese dialect. So I think it started at home. And also, it was always this, I guess, a psychological migration to the fact that I was already passionate about Black people, so through that passion, I was consistent. I just kind of learning, right? Research and starting to hear people's stories. And the more I was studying, the more I was starting to stay in tune. And I guess, you know, it's one of those things that you can't ever take the Congo out of me. So it's a combination is really the foundation at home and me really taking seriously the fact that, wow, we have a story. We come from a country where I don't think the world knows about more. And one of the things I started to realize, because I was getting criticized, I guess it was just this disconnect, this acceptance around the Congolese sometimes is like, well, you're too Americanized, you know, in tune with the language. But as soon as you put Congolese music, I'm shaking and baking, you know. So, and then to the African-American, it's like, oh, wow. Oh, but wait a minute, your last name is different. So I started to be in the middle of both worlds and to realize that, you know what, I'm a Congolese American in the sense where I'm proud from where it all started back in Congo, but I have to accept the fact that I live in America now.
Do you think, again, I do have another question, but I wanted to comment on something that you've mentioned. And for example, you're saying how, you know, you kind of been able to prove through the fact that you speak the local languages and that you can obviously dance to Congolese music, that you obviously have that identity. Do you think to some extent is even a bit harder, or is kind of double work for someone that lives in the diaspora, because you still have to either speak that local language or be able to dance to that music? What happens when you perhaps don't have that, but you still might still feel very connected to your roots, right? Because no one should be able to take those away from you, but almost the way that you present yourself to the world is almost as you having to prove, well, I speak the language, therefore I am, I dance well, therefore I am. Is that something that to some extent can also be negative, or I don't know?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. It can negative if you let it be. It's by the people, because one of the things you started to realize, and this is the part of, I think sometimes, you know, folks can also be what I call intellectual laziness. So you started to connect that with history, because now it opened my eyes to like, wait a minute, I grew up between Congo and Gabon, and I look back the education system, and I look back to like, well, colonialism had a deep effect on everybody, you know. So it's like I got to constantly prove myself. And I can understand why it's hard. But I think for me, because the way I was, I was always intrigued in trying to find out what happened with Black America, right?
Yeah.
What happened with the history of that? Because then I look back how we used to watch Coming to America and Gabon. And when I came here, I was like, wait a minute. I don't hope they don't think Coming to America is how things happening in Africa. So I think from there, I started to find tools for me that will help me sort of validate my identity. But also, I didn't let people get into me.
You mentioned that you're passionate about Black people, and I guess also you've told us a bit about your story, but how do you actually come to discover that passion? And then how did it go from a passion or an idea to something that you spend your everyday doing? So how do you go from, I feel passionate about this, to I'm going to dedicate my life to do this?
Right. I think, well, first of all, I start with passion. You have NGO all over Africa. I mean, you have good and bad NGO. You have good and bad in everything. But yes, one of the things that, you know, it is something wrong when you want to make a social impact. You can't make a social impact without a passion. You can make a social impact with a financial return, but you need to be passionate about the people who you're serving. So for me, that passion started back in the Congo, just my poetry, because I always knew that something about literature. I used to just memorize newspaper, but I was kind of in tune about my own Congolese culture, like, you know, the music. I know we were big on music and the food. I think from then, when you develop passion for self and for your own, I guess, country, right? And then from there, you know, art was always following me because my poet, that's who I am. So I think from being a poet to just performing a different place, different crowd. So I started to really take my poetry seriously. I started to say, you know what? I have the responsibility to educate as much as I can about the truth about the Congo or about, you know, modern day Africa, because I started to realize that it's just a mess. So many stereotypes, so many misunderstandings.
Indeed.
And I started to see, wow, it's not even people's fault. I think that you look at the education system in America. So when you start talking to people, you're like, wow, it's just on both sides. Because you have folks who never leave the continent. So they have their own perception of Black America, right? Mm-hmm. And same thing here. But people don't have money to travel like that. So I started to not to take it personal, to kind of meet folks where they are, to realize that there's some folks who can be ignorant, but it's not their fault, right? They want to learn. And there's some folks who just not choose to because of intellectual laziness. So I think that passion carried me through really be active, like you say. I became just a very active person. But then it dawned on me for the past year or two, that, hey, I got to start monetizing on these things. You see?
Yes.
Because I didn't ask for this. It was coming to me, and folks was telling me, like, wow. You know, so it came to me naturally. I said, wow, I guess folks are paying attention. So I started to monetize. I came up with my first poetry album years ago. I was very frustrated about the view on Africa, what's going on in the Congo. Yeah, so from there, that passion carried me to my poetry city. So I moved around and stayed active. I started to understand monetizing. So from a poet, I went to a community organizer. And from a community organizer, I went to building relationship, networking.
Mm.
And I think gaining different experience, engaging different diaspora.
How has your racial or sociocultural identity influenced what you do? And how others actually perceive what you do?
I think it influenced me tremendously, where it's about finding your place in the world, man. It's about finding where you fit in. But you have to start with your talent. I always have this thing when I engage, I tell people, the gift that you have, become the gift to Africa. The gift that you have, become the gift to humanity, become the gift to your own community. So we have to start with the fact that we are gifted, we are talented. And how do we use that gift in a small scale, large scale? That's where can it make an impact connected to our culture identity. You know what? I'm a human being first. And then I'm proud of my culture identity. Because you have to be proud of your story, of where you are. This is why in Boston you have the African Festival, you have the Caribbean Festival, you have the Haitian Festival, you have the Puerto Rican, all these cultural events. I think people are proud of their story.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to do a better job of connecting the dot that, hey, at the end of the day, everything started in Africa. The beginning of humanity took place. And then how do we use all these experience to be proud of, you know, really of your culture background? Because
yeah,
everyone has a culture root.
Actually, you tapped a bit on to my next question. And my question was, what are you most proud of in your work or in your life?
I think I'm proud of the feedback of the people, man. I'm proud of just the love and the support that I've gotten. Because I think that people used to see something in me that I didn't know, like, what they're talking about. It all started, I think, with a Catholic priest. And I knew that poetry was in me. But this priest, every time he used to see me, man, he would meet with me, he would ask me questions, he would say, you know what? Oh, you write? Won't you write me something? And I write. He said, won't you read? Won't you perform at church? I said, what? I'm not performing this at church. He said, no, this is Christmas. This is, you know, it all started with Christian poetry. And he looked at me, he said, I don't know. He said, I'm going to tell you something. When you speak, all eyes on you.
Hmm.
I'm telling you, man, I observe, you don't see. You need to take that seriously and use that to have a message.
Hmm.
But so every time I'm opening my mouth, you know, standing ovation, and I said, okay, is this something bigger than me? I don't know. I just like performing arts to realize that, okay, you know, this is really, you know, if somebody feel inspired, motivated. And that's why I'm so proud of that. And it motivated me to keep going. That's my small contribution, how small that is, to inspire people that, hey, you have gift just like me.
What, in your view, are the biggest obstacles that stop the biggest obstacles to the African diaspora community succeeding?
Well, there's so many layers to it. There's so many stuff on the table. Well, one of the things that we got to go back to, systematic stuff. We have a lot of systematic oppression. This white supremacy culture. Now, it took me a while to kind of, what does that mean? So you simply mean it means that, wait, there's some system out there, or not designed, you know, to see like black people succeed, or all of these disparity within all these systems, from social care agency, educational. So that's one of the things that create an obstacle too, because we need to improve access to resources for marginalized groups. So you have to look things on systematic level, and then you have to look things also on the community level and individual level. So you have to look at external factors impacting the advancement of African people, impacting African development. What are some of the external factors impacting African development? So for instance, you know, you have our own government. Most of these African government, you know, you create your own obstacle for the local to prosper. We are on our own. We need to invest in each other. That's where I'm going. We need to invest in each other. We need to build economic capital in so many ways. So yeah, we need to have each other back. And that, with the climate right now, I mean, so things is getting worse and worse. But there's hope if we invest more in each other, show more love to one another, support each other more.
So what do you wish you knew when you were 16 and you first arrived to the US? And what advice would you actually give to young people from the community, from the African diaspora community?
Man, it was a different time. I look at the young people now, the generation, you have an entire millennia. I think my advice is these young people come with a lot of talents. You know, use what you have to find out more about Africa and your own culture. And I also talk to the young people and I get them feedback. When I did something with the Congolese community, and there was a lot of young people, I asked them to come up front. And I looked at them, I said, tell us, what would you want to say to the elders in the community? And one of the things these young people said, they said, well, we need to know more about Africa. You also have to let us speak, have a voice. Which goes back to, I think, generally speaking, when we talk about leadership in many African community, it's always like the elders, you know, the adults. Yes. And I know the very tradition, but we need to provide a voice for the young people. And I think people forget that the continent of Africa has a higher percentage of young people all over the world. And when I speak in colleges, I tell the college students, especially all these African Student Association, because they on every campus, I say, as much as you guys love to do fashion show and party, you have an entire continent who need you. You graduated, you need a job, you can travel back and forth, but don't forget that you have an entire continent who need you. You have a lot of young people on the continent who need folks in the diaspora to help them out.